Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to this week's broadcast from River of Life Fellowship Church in Copenhagen, New York. This week, Pastor George Gray looks to set our minds right as we come into the new year with a message titled, Looking to the Future with Faith.
Okay, so beginning of the year, I always try to do something along the same lines at the beginning of the year as we start the year, and I used to call it looking back, looking forward. This year, I want to do it just a little bit different. So this might be a slightly different type of message than what you're used to hearing from me today. I want to do essentially the same thing, take a little look back, take a little look forward, but I want to do it in a, I'm hoping a slightly more motivational manner, okay? It's important to take time every year. If you don't do it regularly, you should at least do it around this time of year, to look back and examine what you've done in your life. Where are you? And then to look forward and to try to get an idea of where you want to be. This is an important thing. We don't do this nearly enough. Most of us are just stuck in the moment, just going from task to task to task to task. But it's important for our own personal development. It's important for our own spiritual development to be taking a look at where we've been and get an idea of where we're going. It's healthy. When we go through life, especially in our younger years, sorry kids, but this is just kind of the way it works. You spend time thinking about like where you're gonna go, you know, this is gonna be so great, I'm gonna travel the world, and you realize that's expensive. I'm gonna have this career, I'm gonna be a brain surgeon. How long do you have to stay in college? I don't wanna be a brain surgeon. You know, it's like we have all these dreams and these ideas and these thoughts about where we wanna go. Then you start to get a little older, and at some point in time you realize that that dream that you had as a younger kid has to give way to groceries. You know, at some point you have to live. Life has a way of reminding you that it's not waiting for you. Life is just life every day. It's tomorrow's coming whether you're ready or not, okay? Excuse me. Somewhere along the path, life happens. Your dreams, your goals, your aspirations get moved from the let's make it happen shelf to the maybe someday shelf, right? Then marriage, kids, a house, and suddenly the reality starts to hit you that maybe your parents weren't so dumb. Because suddenly your priorities have to change. Things happen, your priorities change because it's no longer just about you. You have responsibilities to other people, and you have to live up to those responsibilities. But in the back of our mind, we still hang on to that dream of someday, maybe someday. You know, we're gonna take that trip, maybe someday. There are times in our lives where life allows you to plan way off into the future. I'm a planner. I have plans for months down the road. I have plans for years down the road. I have plans quite literally in a folder in a spot in my office that no one even knows about because they're just like, maybe we can make this happen. And so I want to get an idea of what that might look like because there may be steps that have to be taken between here and there, and I don't want to get so far behind that I now have to push everything even further away. So I plan. Some people say scheme. I say plan. But that's not always what happens. Sometimes life lets you plan. Other times, life forces you to only be able to pay attention to the task that's in front of you. You get pigeonholed into a spot where this is where all of your focus needs to be. You're not going to be allowed to think about what's down the road. You need to finish this task, and then you need to finish the task that's after that, and then the task that's after that. Because you can't think 6-7 months down the road. You have to think today, tomorrow, the next day. Life will make that happen all by itself. It's not a bad thing. It's just what happens with life. Some people actually enjoy that. They enjoy the predictability of it. I am not that person. Because for me, predictability very quickly becomes monotony. Not to be confused with monogamy. Some of your eyes are going, what's that? No. I don't like to do the same thing every single day. I don't want a life where I know exactly where I'm going to be every moment and every day. That's not my personality. Maybe that's yours. That's a different story. Now, some people stay in that rut of being a task-oriented person. The life forces you into that position. Some people stay there for a very short period of time. Other people will get stuck there for years and decades because you're not exactly sure how to get out. We say things like, it's just my lot in life. We'll get to that in a little bit. I bounce back and forth between the two. I get to plan ahead, and then I get stuck in the moment. I get to plan ahead, and then I get stuck in the moment. It's okay. So as an example, for 2025, when I was rolling into 2025, usually somewhere around September, October, I start making plans for the following year. That's how I roll. That's the way my mind works. Well, towards the end of November in 2025, life had a different planning in 2024 for 2025. But at the end of 2024, life had a different idea. And with Samantha's cancer diagnosis, all of my priorities had to switch because all of my goals for 2025 were suddenly very unimportant. They didn't matter. What I had to do was now switch over to, I need to deal with the task that is in front of me. You may want to think you can plan ahead for those things, but you don't know because every time you see a different doctor, a different path gets tossed in front of you. Different things happen. Life happens. We have to make work. We have to make room for it. And honestly, when that whole thing started, I didn't actually know how I was going to handle it. I really don't. I don't know how I'm going to handle today. Just to be honest with you, I'm writing this. I'm sitting at my desk and I'm writing this, and I'm writing different parts, and I'm crying. I'm like, you. For the most part, I handled it fairly well, but I had my dark moments. You know, definitely had my dark moments. I got to work very, very early, learning as much as I possibly could about what this journey might look like. The treatment, the side effects, chemo, different types, what is it? Familiarizing myself with the terminology so that I could be helpful to the best of my ability while Samantha was going through this, because I was just along for the ride. I was committed to understanding everything I possibly could, but I was missing the most important piece of that puzzle that would actually make me hopefully what I was able to do over the last year. We'll see. I'll talk to Samantha later and shit. I haven't talked to her about this because I wasn't gonna check. It's like, is it okay if I do this? Good, thanks. No, bye. If I need a place to stay later, anyway, just talk to me afterwards, it'll be fine. Because no, it's not all about Samantha, but this is the most apt example that I can think of for now. But I was missing a very critical piece of this puzzle. And what I was missing was a perspective of faith. Now, don't hear what I'm not saying. I was not having a crisis of faith. I wasn't walking away from God. That's not what I'm talking about. A perspective of faith is something you do on purpose. It is a choice you make to look at what's going on in your life in a different way. Because sometimes life happens to you, but you have to make a choice inside of those moments to see things differently. God is not going to do this for you. He's not going to make this choice for you. God will not force you to see things differently. He will simply be with you no matter where you are. And I had to make a choice to see things differently. And it took way longer for me to realize what that choice was than I thought. It was not until Samantha's first chemo appointment. She just said she's gonna kill me. If I come up missing, you know who did it. Okay. January 24th, 2025, day one. We were there. Now, just so you know, I still have all that hair. It's in a cupboard in my shop. It wasn't until this day that I actually realized the choice that I had to make. We drove down to the cancer center at Syracuse. It's a quiet day. We weren't talking a whole lot. There was a lot on everyone's mind. We get down there and we walk in and we're in this place. I don't want to be there. She doesn't want to be there. But here we are. Life put a path in front of us that we didn't want to be on, but we're walking it. So here we are. And we walk into that cancer center and I look around and it is a gigantic room with, they call them suites. Infusion area is called a cafe. It's the dumpiest cafe I've ever been to in my life. It's, I didn't see a latte anywhere. So we're there and they pop us right in there and I'm looking around and I see a room filled with dozens of people going through one of the hardest things in their life. Some people doing well, some people not. And that first day I'm looking around and the first thing that caught my eye were all the bags hanging on IV posts. The different colors, some see-through, some not. And you realize that the ones that are not see-through are so caustic that they have to be, they've done it in different ways. I've done enough research to realize what I was looking at, looking around the room. And I did not want to be there. I absolutely did not want to be there. But then our nurse came in. She was the nurse that did the education on the video. She was one of them. And we walked in, she goes, "Samantha Gray with an A." That's how they know her down there. It was really weird. Every time we walk in, "You're Samantha Gray with an A." And I'm like, what is going on? This is creepy. But she was like, "We were hoping we would get you because we were talking with the people online. They were doing what they were doing. We were you know, trying to make light of the situation, getting them laughing, and it was just awesome." We get in there, and I'm watching this girl. She is amazing, by the way. All the nurses down there, guys and girls. I mean, they were just unbelievable, encouraging, uplifting, happy to be there. I'm thinking, I hate you. We're here for this horrible thing, and you're like happy you're here. And I'm looking, and it wasn't just her. Everybody there was like that. We didn't meet one like nasty nurse the whole time we were down there. And then I realized what was going on. In the middle of all that, I realized I'm an idiot. That I had a choice. I had a choice where I could either look around a room and see people suffering, or I could look around the room and see hope. It wasn't until I got to that point, until I started thinking about this, I could see hope. I could choose to see the difficulty and the pain and the suffering that was around me, or I could see some of the strongest people I'll ever meet in my life going through an incredibly difficult thing. God was not going to make that choice for me. I had to make that choice for myself and then live it out. And what I remembered was this. "Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report." Listen to this last part. "If there is any virtue, and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things." Now, he's not talking about It basically means think on these things, dwell on these things. Put your attention there. That, for me, that made all the difference. It changed everything that I was doing. It changed my entire attitude through the whole process. I didn't want to be there, but I'm there. I could not change what was happening, but I could change how I was letting it affect me. That choice made all the difference. Even though I started the year on a path I didn't want to be on, I had goals for 2025. I had put them all into the maybe someday category. I was still able to do at least about half of the goals that I had for 2025 because I was able to change the way I was looking at the year. The year was not something that was happening to me. The year was something that I could participate in, but I had to make a choice to look at the year differently. No one's gonna make that choice for me. No one's gonna make that choice for you. No matter what's going on in your life, you have a choice on how you allow it to affect you. Now, 2025 may have been a tough year for you, and you may be looking at 2026 thinking, I'm not even willing to think about my maybe someday shelf. I'm not even willing to think about those because I don't know what the year is gonna do. I don't know what's coming. You know, all these dark thoughts are in my mind. I feel stuck. Man, I shouldn't have made this decision. I shouldn't have done this. I'm here. I don't know what to do, so I'm just gonna take a nap. You ever been in that spot? You're so overwhelmed, you're so busy, you just take a nap. Yeah, he's about to do it in 5 minutes. I'm kidding. Some of you will, but I don't know. But it's fine. Maybe you just feel stuck. Maybe you just feel trapped. I want to help you today. I want to give you two things that I learned last year. There are things, honestly, that I already knew, but I had forgotten. I hadn't put them in the front of my eye. I wasn't doing them intentionally. I want to talk to you about two things that helped me through last year that I think are can help you through this year and that I know I'm going to take into 2026 with me. First one's this. I told you this was a slightly different message. Stop waiting for the right time or enough time. I talk to people about this all the time. I just can't find the time. I just can't find the time. I just can't find the time. But they always are up to date on their Netflix shows. They're always up to date on their football games. They're always up to date on certain things. They can't find enough time. They can't find enough time. They can't find enough time. Yes, you can. The problem is you're waiting for what you think is the right time or what you think is enough time. And you're wrong on both accounts, okay? Other than me, who has unfinished projects at the house? Yep. Yeah. Every time I start to work on a room, one of the things Samantha will say was, I love this. I think we should do this. Can I ask for one thing? I'm like, yeah, sure. She goes, can you make sure that the trim boards at the bottom are done? Because she knows I'll get to a point where that's the last piece. I don't want to do it. Can you just put those up? Sure, because that means I have to actually finish it. Do you know why men have so many unfinished projects? It's not because we're lazy. It's because we're not, and I know that sounds completely ridiculous. It is not because men are lazy, it's because we're not. We don't want to, instinctually, we do not want to do a little here and a little there and a little there. We want to get it done. And we know in our minds, if I'm going to do this project in this room, I need to bring in these tools and get this set up. It's going to take all this time. And then by the time I get all that done, I'm only going to have this much time to actually work on it. Then I've got to take all this stuff back apart. And I don't want to do that. So I'm going to wait until I have enough time. You want to know what never comes? Enough time. You want to know what else never comes? The right time. You know when the right time is? Now. Do it now. Not right now. I gotta leave church. Pastor said I gotta put trim up in the kitchen. My trim is up in the kitchen, so I'm just saying that part's done. Living room and hallway, that's another story. What we end up doing is making an extremely common mistake, and that common mistake is waiting for the right time or enough time, when what we should be doing is consistent time. It's an old saying, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time, right? One big stinking bite at a time. So here's, and what happens is, when we put the things that are in front of us into the category of when I have time or when I have enough time, problems occur, damage occurs, we become uninterested, we forget about things, and problems arise because other things are coming behind it that just stack up, right? And so we don't necessarily need to have the right time or enough time. We need consistent time. And I want to show you one of my happiest failures that I did this year. It's this guy. So I've been making electric guitars for about 10 years now. I actually got pretty good at it. And it's really fun making electric guitars because I can take that 2-inch block of wood and let it sit for 6 months and it doesn't care. Because it's a 2-inch block of hardwood, it will stay exactly the way I left it. This fall, or actually over the summer, I wanted to start making acoustic guitars. I have always wanted to make acoustic guitars. I haven't because they're temperamental, okay? They're... And so over the summer, I started a couple of projects. Now, this is actually my own design. This is the first time I actually designed one myself. I got two other ones that I started at the same time using different building styles. And this was the one I was the most excited about. Well, around the end of October, I had to focus my attention in other places. So these got put on a shelf, okay? Just popped up, no big deal. I'll go back to them when I have enough time. Now, at the end of October, I didn't have my heat on. Okay? Remember I said temperamental? I didn't have my heat on. Now, we turn the heat on. We turn the pellet stove on. You know what kind of air the pellet stove heats with? Dry air. And I didn't pay attention to the room that I had these stored in. Now, if you want to know the ambient humidity that you should be storing acoustic instruments in, especially acoustic instruments, it's 45 to 50% should be relative humidity. For unfinished wood, it is unbelievably important that that happens because all of the moisture will just get sucked out of this. And you know what happens when you have the dry side of a board and then a slightly moister side of the board on the inside? It changes shape. When you make these, this is bowed on the outside, that's for tension, and it's bowed on the top part, but it's very slight. And one day, I walked up into my shop, my little shop room upstairs, and I grabbed this off the counter, and I looked at it, and I went, ah! Now, I actually did that. I just want to point that out. I was home alone. I seriously did that. I went, ah! Because now there's a giant crack right there. And then once I realized that, I looked at it, and what used to bow out bowed in. I teared up a little bit right there. Then I quickly flipped it over. There's a crack here. There's a crack here. Yeah, I have a crack habit, apparently. Someone's going to take that clip and be like, ha, 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 this is my ringtone for pastor now. And I quickly realized what happened. I turned my humidity gauge on, and it had been at 13% for 2 months. I knew what needed to happen. I just didn't do it. Why? Because I was waiting for the enough time and the right time when what I should have been doing was giving consistent time. Had I just picked this up the first part of November, I would have noticed what was going on. Had my stupid brain turned on my humidity gauge, which is literally at eye level, so it's like 3.5 feet off the ground, so it's... Just seeing who was paying attention. I would have seen it. It has got big numbers on it. And I could have avoided a problem. Now, this can be fixed. Now, this is a test thing, so this isn't for sale. So it's just, if it whatever happens, it's fine. But I could have avoided this. How many times are we in the same situation where we're stuck waiting for the right time or enough time, when really we just needed the time we have? You know where I see this play out more often than not? Marriages. When's the last time you got out? You guys went out? Oh, we're looking. We're just waiting for the right time. The right time? Yeah, go out. You mean like not home? There's other people out there. I don't know. It's so funny. Some of you are like, out. He means outside, right? We're waiting for spring, dummy. We get busy, and we think we're doing the right thing by trying to stay productive, by providing. Look, I'm working really hard. So, no spouse marries their other, no one marries a spouse for their job. Don't marry you for your career. Don't marry you for what you do. They married you. And instead of trying to wait for the right time to open up or enough time to open up, use the time you have. Believe me, if there was anything that I learned at the beginning of last year was that time mattered because we didn't know how much we had. We got to New Year's this year, and we're at New Year's Eve. You know, we're getting ready to go to bed at 8:00, and I just picked up a tennis ball and dropped it, and I was like, "There, we saw it. Let's go to bed." You know, so we sometimes you just got to do what you got to do. And I honestly, I'm standing there, I'm washing dishes, and I look over, and there's Samantha, and she's got tears in her eyes, and she goes, "I'm so glad we made it." See, when you don't, yeah, it was just a, you know, it's just a year. You don't know. Stop waiting for the right time. The right time is now. If you want God to bless what you're doing, you have to actually be doing it. I want God to bless this side job I'm doing. Well, you have to do the side job. I want God to bless me learning an instrument. Great. Practice. He's not just going to beam down expertise on you. You have to do it. And scripture actually shows us this in multiple places. It's probably the most famous verse for this. He who is faithful in very little in a very little thing is also faithful in much. He who is unrighteous in a very little thing is unrighteous in much. Now, this is actually talking about how we spend our money, but the concept is universal. If you won't value the little things, I guarantee you, you don't actually value the big things. You may want the big things, but you won't value them because you didn't value the little things. If you don't value the small moments with your family, with your spouse, with your kids, you don't actually value the big things. Because it's how they grow. One of the things I used to teach when I would try to teach anyway when I was teaching people how to cook is if you don't pay attention to the small details, you're in trouble. Details matter. How much salt you use, how much seasoning you use, how long that's on the grill, how you flip it, what you do, how you take care of these things, that all matters because they all filter into the main dish. It's the little details that matter. You know, most of us have like our favorite place to go eat. Maybe it's a dive, that's fine. But there's something about that place that has got you. You're like, oh, I love going there. Everything tastes like bacon grease. That's a detail that matters. I like to go to very nice places, but I'm extremely picky about it because they have to get the details right. There was at one point I took over 3 restaurants that were failing. Before they knew I was coming, I went and I visited each one of them. I went and I ordered a cup of coffee. First place I went to didn't have coffee. Second place served it in a dirty cup. And I asked for cream. I don't take cream, but I asked for cream anyway. They brought me, this is not a joke, they brought me a heavy cream, like a cup of it. One, if you put heavy cream in your coffee, you don't even like coffee. Now, Abel would say if you put cream in your coffee, you don't actually like coffee. The third place, let's just say that coffee had been there a really long time. Now, when I showed up for my first day there, as soon as I walked in, all the people who had served me that coffee went, and the guy who actually gave me the heavy cream, he goes, "I knew it." Because he knew there was a new manager coming. And they all said, Why did you do that? I said, "Because I wanted to make sure you cared about things that are tiny, that you might think are insignificant." You know, when it comes to our faith and our marriage and our life and our careers and our goals, it's exactly the same thing. If you won't commit to 10 minutes of practice, if you're gonna learn an instrument, you won't commit to an hour. If you're trying to develop a skill or try to go back to school or try to learn anything, if you won't devote small pieces of time because that's all you have at that moment, you won't devote the big pieces of time either. When you start to devote the small pieces of time, the little things, God steps in and he will direct your path to the larger things. But if you're just gonna let the little things go, then what difference does it make? Why is God gonna bless your apathy? He wants to bless your commitment. And that commitment starts in the little things, in showing up. So don't wait for someday to start. No matter how small or how slow you have to move, just start. If you want to grow in your faith and your understanding of the Bible, just start. If you want to grow in your ability to pray for other people, just start. If you want to grow in your career, you want to move into another category, just start. I was working with a guy at Applebee's. This was a long time ago, and I had taken over the kitchen as the manager. And he came up to me. He was one of the head line cooks, and he was a rock star. He really was. He's a very, very good cook. And he stops. He goes, "I'm frustrated. I think I'm gonna leave." I was like, "Okay, what's up?" He goes, "I'm busting my butt. I'm better at anybody at cooking. I can run circles around everybody, and I just can't get promoted. I don't see anyone talking to me about promotions. I mean, what is the deal? How, you know, what do I gotta do?" I said, "You're too good to lose. What are you talking about? You're too capable for me to lose you where you are. You want to move on? Replace yourself." He's like, "What?" Make people as good at your job as you are, and then you can move up. He's like, "Wait, what?" And all of a sudden, a light bulb goes off in his mind. He realizes he was so committed to the big picture, he wasn't paying attention to the details. He couldn't be replaced. That's why he was never replaced. As soon as he replaced himself, we moved him up. That's how it works. But you have to pay attention to not just you. You have to pay attention to everything. You have to just start. He started training other people. He just needed to start. It took a little while, but you have to start. You have to be willing to put in the work. You got to do your part. If you're not willing to do your part, you can't get mad at God for not being there doing what you think he should be doing. God will do his part if you'll do yours, but you go first. So don't wait for someday to happen. Someday's today, okay? Last piece, and this part's actually relatively quick. 50 minutes max. Change your mind about your situation. Nobody else is going to change your mind for you. You change your mind about your situation. So I've said this many, many times over the years. Your perception is your reality. How you see something is going to determine how you relate to it. Okay? This isn't the power of positive thinking. This is just a reality of the human psyche. What you resign yourself in your mind is what you're going to expect and what you're going to look for. So change your mind about your situation. When Samantha's, and this is what I noticed in Samantha's life as we were going through this. When we were in Rochester and Samantha was actually getting her firm diagnosis, the full diagnosis from the doctor down there. The doctor was unbelievable. I mean, he was just an amazing doctor. And he'd been doing it for so long, he's very casual, and he would talk kind of very slow and deliberate, and it was sort of calming and a little unnerving at the same time. We're sitting there, and the doctor gave the diagnosis. And we were hoping, and we had hopes for one direction. And he says, "Well, we could call this stage 4, but I'm going to call it stage 3 because it sounds better." And he gave us all of these things. All I heard was 4. I'm like, I blanked out for a second. And he says, "But I'm going to call it 3. And I was like, "Okay, so are you lying to me, or is this just your way of like playing with us?" And it, you know, so I'm like, "Okay, George, you got to listen." And so we're listening, and he's being very calm. And I turn, Samantha's off to my right. I turn, and I watched hope drain out of her eyes. When you get those numbers, when you know what those numbers mean, you get those numbers. I watched hope drain out of her eyes for a couple of seconds. And that hit me. Thought, what am I going to do? How do I function in this now? And he was one of those doctors that says something. And now if you're in the medical field, pauses. Not cool. Okay, not cool. Pauses in body language. Not cool. When Samantha was at the hospital and I was having my first neck surgery, the doctor comes out after like 7.5 hours and he sits down, he's all sweaty, he puts his hand in his head and goes, and like, "She thinks I'm dead." And the first thing he says was, "He's got a lot of veins in his neck." And she's like, "Is he okay?" "Oh, yeah, yeah, he's fine. Could you lead with that?" So we're there. We're there, and I'm watching. And honestly, I'm watching fear take hold at the moment. And he stops, and he says, "But it's okay. Because this can be beaten. It's going to take a year. And if you're willing to do the work, this can be beaten." And that's what I remember about that. And you probably don't even remember that this happened. But I watched her watch, and she, in her mouth, without saying it, I watched her basically say to herself, "This can be beaten. This can be beaten." Okay, now maybe it was true, maybe it's not, but it didn't make any difference. That made the difference right there. Straightened up a little bit. "This can be beaten." And we started listening. We have work to do. From that point on, my viewpoint changed about what she was going through. Everything was based around this thought. "This can be beaten. This can be beaten." Now, it wouldn't be for another month or so before I actually got to that first chemo treatment and I realized the power of the choice I had to make. This, I'm talking about Samantha. If I'm willing to do the work, this can be beaten. She, I don't know what happened to her. All of a sudden, like, she became healthy, and I hated it. When we're driving home, "We will no longer be eating." And I was like, "Whoa, whoa, 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 whoa." So suddenly, I was Yosemite Sam. When I say whoa, I mean whoa. Who's we? I'm like, okay, it's fine. Shh, whoo, shh. This is me talking to myself. Shh, whoo, it's fine. I can eat candy bars in the store before she sees them. Suddenly I was a parent with a toddler. You know, it's like I'm in this store unwrapping a Reese cup and throwing it away. I'm like, you don't think I didn't do it? I did. I'm just saying, I did. And I still do. I look at my car when I get home. The wrappers laying around. Like, She knows. Trust me, she knows. I stayed fat. She knows, okay? It's just the way it works. I'm not big boned. I'm big appetited. But everything that we did when that mindset changed, the way we approached everything changed. This can be beaten if we're willing to do the work. Now, did it guarantee success at the end? No. Did it suddenly heal her? No. Did it make the side effects of the chemo less? No. It didn't change the path we were on. It changed how we looked at the path that we're on. Because when the doctor tells you, oh, by the way, there's some treatment coming up, and it's gonna suck. Okay. We do it. Why? Because this can be beaten if we're willing to do the work. It can. Doesn't mean that it will. In other words, this isn't over by any stretch of the imagination. We're a year into this. It's not over. There's still lots of stuff in the future, but it doesn't matter. Right now, everything in my mind is couched in this can be beaten if we're willing to do the work. If we're willing to do the work. I drove 25,000 plus miles last year. Why? Because this can be beaten if we're willing to do the work. We changed the way we eat stuff. It's fine. As I told you, I'd cry. Why? Because this can be beaten if we're willing to do the work. What we found out was 2% of cancer patients actually commit to the dietary side of the treatment. 2%. Yeah, it's really the only time we've ever been in the 2% of anything. Now, I went kicking and screaming, just so you're fully aware. Did it because this can be beaten. But we have to do our part. We want God to walk with us. We want God to strengthen us. We want God to give us confidence. We want to be okay with whatever the outcome is. But that means I have to change my mind on how I see what I'm doing. You might be stuck in a job you don't want to be in. You may be stuck in a family situation you don't want to be in, a financial situation you want to be in. Maybe you said yes to something that now you're just like, what was I thinking? And you don't know what to do. First things first, change your mind about where you are. God cannot make you suddenly happy, okay? Christianity is not a drug. If it was, it would be awesome. You know, we would use real communion wine. And bigger glasses. It's not how it works. The goodness of God is something you have to choose to believe. You hear what I just said? The goodness of God is something you have to choose to believe. But you also have to leave the outcome to Him. We don't demand. We trust. We look forward in faith, trusting that if we do our part, God will do His. We just don't get to determine what His part is. But we have to be willing to do the work on our side. Now imagine if we sat down with the same doctor, and the doctor said, well, it's probably hopeless, but let's do it anyway. You know how much, what we would have done? Nothing. Why on earth? Here's an idea. Let's poison you for a year. Just see what happens. No. We would have gone traveling. Let's go see places that we didn't know. We don't know if we have enough time to see. Let's go do something else. It would have completely changed everything that we did. Eat, drink, be merry, for tomorrow we die. But that's not what He did. That's not what He said to us. There are so many things that He said I will never forget. I mean, this guy's been doing this for so long, like 40-something years. I mean, he's an amazing doctor. And I appreciate more of what He said and the encouragement that He gave us, and I think He'll ever actually understand.
Hey, thanks for joining us. We're glad you could be here. We had to cut this sermon a little short for our time here on the radio, but if you'd like to hear or see more, Watch our service live on Facebook, YouTube, or visit our website at www.riveroflifechurch.org. We hope you have a great week.